Well, hello there. It's been a while, hasn't it? Well, let's not get into that. Let's just get right into it. It's been a while because I haven't recorded any lately, but I'm recording one now, so there it is. Let's get into this. This is my personal history of the zombie apocalypse. It's my contention that the zombie apocalypse is ongoing. It's been ongoing for quite some time since, well, my whole life, practically. It just keeps escalating and getting worse and worse. No one really noticed that the zombies had taken over the world because nothing had really changed. Everything stayed the same. My experience of the zombie apocalypse goes back to 1974, maybe it's 1975, with John Russo's novelization of The Night of the Living Dead. My dad had that book. He liked to read. He was a horror fan. He had that book on the nightstand next to his bed, and I'd seen it there quite a few times. I went past it. I looked at it. It had this lurid green cover with all these ghastly gray hands poking through a boarded up window, and I knew it was a horror story. And I was a horror fan, at least I thought I was. I liked those old movies about Frankenstein and Dracula and the Mummy and the Wolfman that they showed on Sammy Terry on Friday nights at midnight on WTTV 4, Channel 4, out of Indianapolis, Indiana. We lived, an hour and a half south or so of Indianapolis, and it was hard to get Channel 4. Sometimes you could, sometimes you couldn't. It depended on the weather. But if you had a good friend whose family had a little bit of money and could afford a TV tower, they could get Channel 4, so you'd weasel your way into being invited to spend the night with them on a Friday night so that you could stay up late and watch Sammy Terry. Look it up, man. Sammy Terry is one of the great horror hosts of the 60s and 70s. And whenever people talk about horror hosts, they talk about people like Goulardi and Svengoolie and the people from, you know, Pittsburgh and New York and Chicago and that guy in San Francisco. I can't think of his name right now, but he was well known. They should add Sammy Terry to that list because he was an Indiana institution for kids growing up during that time. I asked my dad if I could read that book. He should have told me no, because I was only 7 or 8 years old, and no way could I handle a book that was that damn scary. But my parents had a really great attitude about books. They let me read pretty much anything I wanted from an early age. If I wanted to read a book, they'd say, yeah, sure, read it. If I saw a book at the supermarket that looked good to me, they'd buy it for me. That's how I got Stephen King's The Stand. And that must have been the summer of 1979, at the same time that Disney's The Black Hole had come out. There's a novelization of that book as well, The Black Hole. And I saw The Stand on the paperback rack, and I had to have it because I read the description about the few survivors who are wandering a wasted nation, like a few peas rolling around the bottom of an empty can. So I took that book to my mom, and I asked her if I could buy the book, because I was excited. It sounded like a great book. And she bought the book for me, and the cashier was just smiling at me, all happy because I was so cute. She said, oh, you want to read The Black Hole? No, I don't want to read The Black Hole. I don't care about Disney. I'm a Stephen King fan. Even back then, before he became the household name that he was through the 80s and 90s. I suppose he still is. I don't really know. Doesn't matter, because we're not talking about Stephen King, even though we're talking about Stephen King. We're talking about Night of the Living Dead. But my dad warned me. He said, that is a scary book. You don't really need to read it. But I was headstrong, and I was determined to read it. So I took the book, and I saved it for Saturday. Because even though it was a thin book, I was only, 8 years old. I think this was in third grade, so I would have been 8. And I was going to read it slowly, and because I read slowly at that age. What eight-year-old doesn't? I woke up early that Saturday. I started reading the book, and it didn't take long until I was encased in the blue horrors up to my ears. But it was a riveting story, and I read through it. And the worst part of it was the 16 pages of photos from the movie in the center of the book. It was bad enough seeing those zombies in my mind as I read the book, but looking at the photos, I could see them with my eyes. And it was the most horrible thing I had ever seen in my life up to that point. I finished the book that afternoon, and my life changed. I mean, that's not even an exaggeration. My young life changed. I can't express how badly that book terrified me. On the back of the book was the most horrifying words I had ever read in my life. It said, "A true horror classic." Being a little squirt, I took that to mean that the events in the book had actually happened somewhere. And for some reason at that age, I thought that it happened somewhere down in Georgia. And I looked on a map to see where Georgia was, and it didn't look to be that far from Indiana, where I grew up. And I was thinking about, oh, these things are spreading. They're multiplying. They're coming this way. And it won't be that long until they're here. Every night when I went to sleep, or tried to go to sleep, I'd pull the blankets up over my head, and it must have been summertime at that time, because it was hotter than hell, and I'd sweat, and it'd be hard to breathe, and of course I couldn't sleep. But I didn't want to pull the blankets off my head, because then the damn things could see me, and then they'd get me for real. And I'd pull the blanket down just a little bit to get some fresh air, and I'd see a zombie standing in the corner of the room. You know, it's just a coat hanging on a rack, but in the dark, it looked like a zombie standing there. And sleep was almost impossible until finally I would fall asleep out of exhaustion and then have terrible dreams all night long. One of the dreams I remember, there was an old brown house right next to ours. And that house had burned, the back end of it had burned sometime in the previous few years. And the house still stood there with the windows broken out with holes in the walls, the roof half caved in, and the insides was a total wreck. And being a young brat, really anxious to explore, I climbed inside that house many times to go poking through the ruins. And so that house entered my dreams as the house of a zombie. Now, this zombie was a young woman when she died. She had been a mother with a small child. And this zombie, in my dreams, was standing in the kitchen. The fire started in the kitchen. So the kitchen was just all black and ruined, with crap everywhere. And the zombie would be standing at the ruined stove, shaking an old frying pan across this ruined stove. As I was saying, when I had to pause for a cough, I'm pretty sure you didn't want to listen to me cough, so I stopped it while I did that. Well, this zombie was standing in front of a ruined stove, shaking a frying pan across the top of the stove, groaning to itself. And as I listened to the groans, I realized it was talking. It was talking about his baby. And that's when I saw it was carrying a half-burned baby doll in its left arm. And I realized that zombie thought that half-burned baby doll was its actual child. That's when I also realized the child had survived the fire, but the woman had died in it and subsequently became a zombie. I can't tell you just how awful that dream made me feel, you know, just the feelings for that dead woman and for the girl who was still alive who missed her mom and probably didn't know her mom had become a zombie. But even worse, what if she knew her mom was a zombie? I was too young for that kind of crap, but I was having those dreams anyway. Years later, I started having this dream that I was a cast member of the original movie Night of the Living Dead. And because I had read the script, I knew what was going to happen. But I also knew that it wasn't a movie, that the events in the movie were real, and that cast was going to be slaughtered. I tried to warn them, but they all laughed at me, called me a nut, said I was out of control, I was paranoid, I was on drugs. All that was true, but it didn't change the fact that I knew what was going to happen. So as the zombies broke through the front door, I ran out the back door. And as I ran out the back door into the dark, I could hear the screams and the thuds and the thumps. And even worse than that, I could hear the flesh being ripped from the bones of the human cast members and their dying screams. That's another zombie dream I've had over the years. I had many, many of them from the age of 8 until I was well into my 30s. So call it 30 years of zombie dreams. Thank you, John Russo and George Romero. You guys really gave me a lot of grief. I had that copy of Night of the Living Dead. I carried it around with me everywhere because it impressed me so deeply. I showed it to my friends to try to get them to understand just how deep and impactful that story was. But nobody cared. They thought it was dumb. And it was really amazing to me that no one grasped just how horrible and awful that story was. It was very frustrating. I just did not understand why no one could understand what that story did to me. So eventually we moved out of that house that we lived in when I read that book. I couldn't stand to have that book in my possession anymore, and I didn't want anyone else to have it. So right after the house had been emptied, I threw the book underneath one of the floors. And I don't know whatever became of it, but my last glimpse of that book was lying in the dirt underneath the kitchen floor, and I left it there. That book had to stay there. That's what it deserved. But I had to have another copy. I found an advertisement for it in the back of a comic book a year or two later. It was, I think, 75 cents. I ordered it. It came. The nightmares renewed. And I don't remember what happened to that book. I don't know what became of it, but I no longer have a copy. And just this weekend, I found that edition of that paperback on Amazon, and I ordered a copy. I think this one was $8. It's coming. It'll be here. I hope the nightmares stay away. So that was the beginning of the zombie apocalypse back in the 70s, the early 80s, as I grew to accept the fate that we all face with the zombies taking over the world. In 1979, the so-called Summer of Horror, well, at least that's what Stephen King called it, because that's the summer that Dawn of the Dead came out. It's also the summer of Prophecy. I don't think I've ever seen the movie Prophecy, but I did read the book, the paperback, when it came out. It was something about a misshapen Sasquatch or something. I don't really remember. It didn't make much of an impression. But at that time, I remember I saw one trailer for the movie on late night television. It was that part of the movie where that National Guardsman is leaning against the wall and this zombie's crawling towards it. And the other National Guardsman standing there saying, "Shoot it, man. Shoot it in the head." That just went straight through me. And I had to see that movie. Of course, I had to wait about 5 years until it came out on video cassette. And I got to see it then. I was a little disappointed at the time. I think I just finished my junior year of high school. And I thought it was just a sort of a shoplifter's dream to be able to take over a mall and live in it and just get whatever you want out of the mall. It took a few more years before I started to understand how it was making fun of consumer culture that was taking root in our country at the end of the 70s and beginning of the 80s. All of that consumerism, the shop till you drop, the yuppies were rising at that time. I read sometime or somewhere that the events of Dawn of the Dead take place 3 weeks after the ending of the movie Night of the Living Dead. And we all know 10 years elapsed from the movies Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead, but we can accept it was 3 weeks, and the shit was truly hitting the fan in that movie. I totally lost my train of thought. I had to stop the recording for a moment while I gathered my scattered wits. Didn't take long because there aren't many wits together. But yeah, the shit was hitting the fan at the beginning of that movie. Then the characters of the movie escaped to that mall where they just unleashed an orgy of consumerism. And that reflected our culture of the time. I remember the malls had become a big thing in the middle 80s. I remember I was enthralled by them. Of course, we didn't have any around where I lived because I lived in such a small, rinky-dink town. The nearest mall was an hour and a half away, but once I got my license and I felt confident enough to actually drive that far, I started spending a lot of time there. Didn't know it that I had been infected with the zombie virus, and it was starting to take over my brain. I don't know if I've shaking any of it off, but since I recognize that we're living in the middle of the zombie apocalypse, maybe there's some hope for me. But all those zombie hordes in the malls, both in the movie and in real life, whatever became of them, they're online now. They're on eBay and Amazon where we can't see them. I don't know how dangerous they are, but they're there. And that brings us to Day of the Dead. Released in 1985, if I recall correctly. That's where we are now. That's a critique of our own current culture. That's almost 40 years ago, but things don't change too much at the culmination of the zombie apocalypse. It's just, you know, survival, staying away from the hordes. The zombie apocalypse is complete. They rule the world. Look around you. All the mindless people, all of the consumerism, all of the mindless, slavish devotion to a system that's so rotten to the core, it's a wonder it hasn't just collapsed under its own rotten weight. But we all worship it. We all support it. We all perpetuate it. In the book, or the movie Day of the Dead, scientists estimated that the dead outnumber the living 100,000 to 1. That would leave around 75,000 actual humans left alive in the world. And that sounds like a hopeless number, but after the Tambora supervolcano explosion 75,000 years ago, there were many less humans left than that, perhaps only 1,000 breeding pairs. We recovered from that, so we can shake off this zombie apocalypse. We can recover. We can build anew. But that makes me wonder, as I just stated, you know, maybe we're all zombies. Some of us are more aware than others. Maybe those of us who are more aware aren't actually human, but we're like Big Daddy in the land of the dead. We're zombies, but we're a little bit more aware. That's not a very cheerful thought, but it's one that we're going to have to accept, even if we are Big Daddy. You got to be self-aware. Now, there are things about the movies that don't translate one-to-one over to real life, but they are comparable. You know, the hordes of the mindless meat robots are wrecking havoc in public in the movies. In real life, all you have to do is drive down the road and look at traffic around you and realize just how other people can't drive. It's like they have no minds. I'm not sure that other people are even conscious. And if they're not conscious, then that makes them zombies, right? I mean, I'm conscious. I think. Therefore, I think I am. So maybe I'm only a Big Daddy, a more self-aware zombie, but does that give me any hope? I hope it does. And the insurrection on January 6th, I looked at all the zombies that went to the Capitol and tried to take it over. They weren't thinking for themselves. They were being led. They were being driven. I mean, there's not a single one of them in there who could form a coherent thought all on his own. They were just following a leader. And that's what zombies do. I mean, if you go back to the original conception of a zombie, you know, the witch doctors in the Caribbean islands who took over a person's corpse and made it a slave. That's what these people were, the most rudimentary zombies, the most basic zombies that couldn't even use a tool like they could in Night of the Living Dead. They were just mindless, shuffling, shambling corpses used to further the ends of some evil witch doctor. And in the movies, you know, you have these evil corporations that cause the apocalypse in some way, like in Return of the Living Dead, the military, it might as well be a corporation with those drums of nerve gas or whatever they were. And they're always in collusion with the government to cover it up if the government actually survives, which it didn't in Dawn and Day of the Dead. But up until that point, there was a functioning government, and the government's first response is always the cover up. Look at the political headlines now. I mean, the zombies have taken over the government. Tell me that our members of the House of Representatives and in the Senate, tell me there's a conscious thought among all 535 of them. Maybe together, over 500 zombies can come up with one conscious thought. You know, if they marshal the strengths of their collective will, of whatever will they have left, maybe they can summon up one conscious thought, but that's distributed among all 535 of them, so it doesn't really count, all right? It doesn't count. So no, they're not conscious. They're zombies, every last one of them, except maybe Mitch McConnell. He's the evil witch doctor. It's disheartening. Now, in the movies, the survivors isolate themselves in armed camps. They scrounge for supplies. Isn't that what a job feels like? you feel like you leave your fortress every day to go to this horrible place you don't want to have to go to in order to gather supplies for yourself. Now, in a job, you're collecting a paycheck, but you use that paycheck to further your life at the fortress, to get your supplies, to get your liquor that numbs your mind to the ongoing horror of the ongoing zombie apocalypse. And if you're lucky, you live in a legal state where you can buy some weed, which I don't, but whatever. You know, I drive a truck, so I have to wait for it to be federally legal. Although I did eat some gummies a few months back, and about 45 days after I ate the gummies, I had to go piss in a cup. So that anxiety wasn't really worth it. Zombies are really dumb. Have you been around people lately? You know, take a scroll down your Facebook feed. People are really dumb. Therefore, people are zombies. Zombies eat people. Now, we have our snitch culture, the cancel culture. I mean, all these people turning on each other and devouring each other on social media in order to gain points, to gain lives, to gain strength, to absorb the personality and strength of their enemies. I don't know, but it's a cannibalistic culture, and cannibals are zombies are cannibals. QED, right? Quod erat demonstrandum. A bite or a scratch is fatal from a zombie. Go engage with these people on Facebook and on Instagram and on Twitter. Just rile them, rouse them in any way, and they'll turn on you, and they'll scratch you, and they'll bite you, and that infects your mind, and you brood over it, and you react, you lash out with your own nasty comment, and you become one with the zombie apocalypse. You become a zombie. You're no big daddy anymore. You're just one of the mindless hordes. You shouldn't act like that. You try to escape. Escape from your fate. Escape from the zombie apocalypse. Become sentient. Join the rest of us who are at least mildly self-aware. And in the movies, in these zombie movies, there is no hope. And that's the one place where the zombie movies and real life overlap. There is no hope. There's nothing for us except to remain in our fortresses, keep scrounging for supplies, and savor those bottles of liquor because they numb you to the horror. In George Orwell's book, 1984, he said, imagine the future as a boot stamping a human face forever. Our future is this. Imagine a zombie eating a human brain right out of the skull, straight from the source, forever. Only in our future, the victim is allowing it to happen. The victim wants it to happen. The victim wills it to happen. You will be assimilated. You will be a zombie. Well, thank you for listening. And until next time, don't be bitten, okay? Just don't get bitten.